We go national on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne.
Hello.
Sammy McKee, Derek Brandale, and Jake the Snake Schultz. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Steve Valiquette, analyst for the New York Rangers on MSG and CEO of ClearSight Analytics. And then in about half an hour, we'll welcome in back to our program, Dr. Jason Smith. He's an elite orthopedic surgeon, presently working for the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll get his thoughts on what he saw. We know what we saw with Connor McDavid.
Yeah. What'd you see?
We can see a lot of concerns.
Boy. Do you want to play doctor?
We will.
Doctor?
Oh, we're going to play doctor.
Doctor?
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 Doctor. We'll get into that, but... no affiliation. He's done almost 20 years at the professional ranks.
Doctor.
Worked with a lot of teams in the NHL, Major League Baseball. I'm just curious to see what he saw. What was his first thoughts on what he saw?
Tough night for Canada in general last night. I know the Leafs did win, but playing another Canadian team that lost. The Flames lost. The Oilers lost. Canucks lost.
Yeah.
Tough night.
Where does goaltending rank for you in terms of the Edmonton Oilers right now? I know Connor McDavid left after his first shift, which, I don't know, did that shock the team? Did they find themselves stuck in mud after that?
I think it was a little bit of a what just happened. He was buzzing. Like, he came out there and got his speed going in the neutral zone, got a puck, got going. It felt to me like Edmonton was going to just plow over Columbus, and then it all just kind of turned a minute in.
I would say that, you know, I'm not exactly a goalie expert. We're going to have one on here very shortly, but 2-4-1 with a 3-5-1 goals against and an 8-7-2 save percentage. Those numbers don't look too great when they jump off the page to you.
Skinner might not be great.
8-7-2 in seven games is a scary start.
If they would address that at some point this season and say, we were too close to not.
They had those combos last year.
Oh, we're not going through the Jack Campbell kind of conversations again, are we?
You think Skinner's going to figure it out?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I like the guy.
He came within a goal of winning the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
And was very good for them in lots of games in the playoffs. Like,
that's
very
great.
Good.
So if you're within a goal of things, that's pretty good.
Well, maybe
we give
not
them
a
credit.
Goal.
So at least made the second round last year.
A game.
No.
I just found that out.
2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Freebie.
Yeah.
So that hurt them last night, I thought. There's a couple of pucks that seemed to go through them. The coach never blames them directly, but didn't think he was very good.
Impressed with Columbus, I got to say. They've had a nice start to the year here. They're above 500. You know, they're
Dean Evason's got them playing.
They honestly are playing inspired hockey. And, you know, it's unthinkable what happened to them, but it seems like it's really...
Yeah, you got to tip your hat to these guys for playing hard.
Yeah, Sean Monahan, he's got 4 or 5 goals on the season now.
I can't tell you how great a story it would be if they were just like in the playoff mix and a fun team and playing hard. Like, that'd be, like I said, Evason would scare me into playing good too. Scariest face in the league.
Yeah, a little tough for Western Canada last night. Vancouver losing. In overtime to Calgary or to Carolina. Calgary losing to Vegas.
I was pretty lopsided affair. I watched that one.
Yeah, Vladar, came down to earth a little bit, I think, last night too. And then Connor Hellebuck. But let's bring in our Tuesday regular here on the show, Steve Valiquette.
There he is.
MSG.
Three Emmys today.
CEO of ClearSight Analytics. How are you, pal?
Doing well, boys. How are we?
Good, good. So is 10 games enough to kind of settle in on the goaltending front here? Or I'm looking at the wins, and I'm seeing some familiar names up at the top, like Bobrovsky and Vasilevsky. And then there's Stolarz, I think, tied for fourth for wins here. So... is this going to kind of sort itself out, or is there one guy, maybe a Stolarz, that can rise to the next level and hold it?
You know, Kipper, it's funny because when you go from case to case, team to team, you come across different abnormalities, maybe in somebody's game. They might have been really good at something, but it's almost like having a bad run of cards. And you can have a bad shoe when you go to the casino. I was digging into Aiden Hill yesterday because it's interesting on him getting ready for his Calgary start last night. And going into the game, he'd allowed 4 goals on 5 breakaways. And I'm like, I know Aiden. I know he's really good on breakaways. I go back and I look at his playoff run when he wins the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. He faced 16 breakaways during the postseason. 0 goals against. You know? So it's like, what are we talking about sometimes, you know? You know that there might be something technically there where he wasn't coming out as far as he was 2 years ago, and those things can be quickly fixed. So as long as you have all hands on deck, guys, you can get past small things when the sample size is very strong behind somebody that might be off to a bad week or two.
Yeah, and despite losing last night, Hellebuck leads all goalies with 6 wins.
Yeah, and I thought that last night he kind of looks a little Roman Chechmanic again, you know, and I don't know if you guys remember Roman Chechmanic.
Oh, yeah. Big guy.
It would get wacky sometimes. And, you know, I think that it's funny. I remember Bobby Clark, after they had let him go, he was quoted as saying, it just gets wacky sometimes. He's a really good goalie. He's got a big frame, but it just gets weird out there. And you just can't anticipate everything that he's doing if you're a defenseman. The pucks aren't going clean where they should be.
So Skinner's another really big guy, and we were just talking about him before we got on air. What are your thoughts on his performance this year? Is it kind of waiting for more games for it to sort itself out, or is you know?
It's you know what, Borny, it's dicey because if you go back to when Jay Woodcroft was fired last year, it was November 12th, yeah. And Edmonton was giving up a ton off the rush. They were 32nd in the NHL at that time. So they were struggling because the environment was difficult on Skinner. Skinner, over the last 2 years, has the second worst save percentage in the NHL off of odd man rushes as well as full rush. He's not a great goalie at backing up, managing speed, gap. You see, when the hard part about the rush is that you can lose your net. A lot of goalies lose their net, plus, you know, you're doing math as you're trying to calculate, is anybody going to pass? Who's open? There's different variables there. The funny thing to me with Skinner is he's got a great save percentage. He's a top 5 save percentage in the zone when he's in set D zone and he can see his reads and Edmonton's got good sticks. He stops the puck. He's an NHL goalie, but off the rush, he's not. And if they can't, and then the point I wanted to make about after Woodcroft to Knobloch, they went into the playoffs as the number 2 defensive team protecting their goalie off the rush. So if you can protect him and give him a safe environment, he'll be successful.
Gotcha.
But if you want to play up and down the ice, he's not your goalie.
So where would Skinner be in terms of his mindset when you're a game away from winning the Stanley Cup and you looked at a fairly decent blue line, you know, and say what you will about Philip Broberg taking time to get there, but he arrived. He arrived in the Stanley Cup final, and now he's arriving for the St. Louis Blues. He's gone. Cody Ceci's gone. Desharnais is gone. And you look up and you see Stetcher and you see Dermott and who am I missing?
Emberson.
And yeah. Like that can't be helping his confidence, really.
You know, Kipper, it's you can't go there, though. And look, I've made the mistake, and I was maybe a little younger than Skinner is at this time right now, but I have PTSD when I drive through Springfield, Massachusetts, because I had such a bad year there. Mm-hmm. And I have to drive from Connecticut to get to my place in Vermont. It's brutal. Every time I drive through there, I go, oh, I feel terrible. Get me through this border. And because I had a defenseman named Robert Schnabel. I hope he's not listening. But man, he was awful out there. And I felt like we were always down 5-on-4. And he was such a distraction. I never felt like he could protect anybody. I legit thought we were killing every time we were out there at 5-on-5. But guess who paid the price? I'm the one pulling the puck out of the net. And it dawns on me after a number of weeks of these self-fulfilling prophecies that I got to knock it off because, again, it's always on us, right, fellas? Like, all eyes are on the goalie as soon as the puck goes in the net. So if you are having that, you got to get past it. I hired a sports psychologist when I was 27. I wish I had the courage to do it earlier in my career. I would have been in the NHL sooner.
So we talked about a couple of guys who are struggling this season. Last week, you gave us your 10 best performing goalies in the NHL. Have you got some thoughts on the other side of things? Yeah. I know you keep these lists.
It's funny. I'm putting this list together. I'm like, oh, how bad do I want to just trash these 10 guys? But I don't want to do that, right? I was a goalie. So, you know, it's a little harder than it looks. But I started off with number 10. It's Darcy Kuemper. And we're going to work our way down the list to the leader of the Masters, the minus goaltender. And Darcy last season was 97 out of 98 goalies. And LA's environment is the easiest. It's the easiest place to play goal. Wow. Los Angeles. Oh, yeah. For the last 2-3 years, if you want to be, if you're in a contract year and you don't make a lot, Stolarz could have picked LA. It would have been a good choice. You know, so we talk about that. Varlamov, he's ninth, and I love Varley. Played with him, love him. But you know what he's had? He's had 5 broken play goals, and sometimes those can't be always predictive because it hits a shin pad, goes to a guy in the back door, and those can hurt you. Number 8 is your guy, Ullmark. You know what I'm seeing right now, guys, around the league is a lot of the goals are starting from the dead angle and from below the goal line, passes to the slot. And we saw it again last night in the Winnipeg game, Toronto game. If you remember the Kreider goal when Zibanejad passed it across to him against Stolarz as well, those plays, because they're predictive, and Ullmark, I was watching his Vegas game, his last start, he gave up 5. He's going into that slide, going into that reverse on the way to the post. So it's almost like the bumper guy that used to be in the slot is really the goal line bumper guy right now. And he's there waiting for the goalie to slide down so he can move the puck quickly, because goalies can't move from their knees nearly as well as they move from their feet. And the goals actually are alarming. I'll just go off track for a second. Last season, these types of goals were up 116. And this year, 134 goals in the first 3 weeks from these low bumper plays. So when you guys are watching the NHL tonight, watch these low bumper plays. Everything that's getting down, especially on the power play, when that guy's open down there, as soon as he receives it, he's not shooting it, he's always moving it. And when they move it quickly, you're seeing the goalies actually just get stuck in that reverse VH and not be able to move. And if I was coaching Stolarz, number one thing I'd be sharing with him right now is, man, when that puck gets drawn down, beat the puck on your feet and get to the post. And stay on your feet there, because nobody's shooting it. Everybody is just waiting for the goalies to go down. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's a big one. Bobrovsky is a funny one, because over the last 3 regular seasons, he is always ranking really low in our expected goals model. And, you know, he's killed it on the playoff runs. But he's, over the last 3 years, he ranks 30th out of 35 goalies that have faced a minimum 2,000 chances. So that's always surprising to me. He's number 7 right now. He's not. Wow. He's getting wins, Kipper, but he's not making the saves that he needs to make for them to be successful long term. Markstrom is number 6, and he's funny because if you go back to when he went from Vancouver to Calgary, he's going through the same thing right now. He has a hard time adjusting in his first year moving from there. And then if you remember the year after, his second year in Calgary, he was a Vezina finalist. So that's Markstrom. The next one is 5, Ingram, top goalie last year. I think he'll regain form. Vanacek, number 4, tough fit for him in San Jose. Fedotov, number 3. I don't know if we're going to see him again. Not NHL ready.
No.
He doesn't move well at all. Huge. I don't know if you guys have seen him play. But doesn't move well enough to play in the NHL. Skinner, 2. And Georgiev, number 1. Georgiev. Yeah, but you know what? It was what we talked about last week. He has 7 bad goals against. That's most in the league, but they're all from the dead angle, and he's getting caught in transition. Again, that sticky spot.
That's great stuff, Allie.
Steve, I got to ask you about Dan Vladar in Calgary, and I give Vladar and Dustin Wolf full credit because they've gotten out of they got their team out of the gate really strong, but I don't know if you caught his comments, his post-game comments the other night about being a little tired and, you know, needing to talk to the goalie coach and figuring out, you know, what's going on. He was cramping up the other night. And I'm just, my first thought is being a player in that room going, oh, my God, like we're 6 games in, you're tired. But then there's another part of me who's retired at 58 going, maybe that's just a guy who knows who he is and knows where his comfort zone is and doesn't want to leave it. And maybe in some weird way, that's a good thing or it's not. I don't know anymore. The more shows I do, the less I know.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kipper, I was listening to your show Saturday as I was walking to Madison Square Garden from Grand Central. And I almost got hit by a car when you guys were telling that story. I was dying laughing. I almost lost my composure. Yeah. You know what? I know Dan. I coached him when I was with the Chicago Steel, USHL. And very likable, happy yes. kid, you know. And
very and by honest. The way,
no, it's like so honest. It's like, dang, shut up, you know. Like, just keep it to yourself. You know? And no, I mean, it, like, I remember being on the ice with him. And he was so talented at that age. You knew he was going to play in the NHL someday. He really didn't need to take anybody's advice. So he wasn't that coachable. But I also knew that would hurt his ceiling. Mm-hmm. You know, being coachable to me is being able to decipher the right information from the wrong information, especially for a goalie where there's going to be a lot of opinions on you. And Dan wasn't always the easiest to receive, and that always surprised me, and I thought that would hurt him as far as his ceiling. Now, if I'm his goalie coach, Kipper, and I hear that, and by the way, Jason LaBarbera was one of my best friends. I couldn't even call him on this. I was about to call. I was like, I'm leaving it alone because I don't even want to know, you know, because it looks bad on Barbs. And by the way, we've all had dehydration issues in games. That game that I was telling you guys about where I got sidetracked looking at LeClaire's stick.
Yeah.
In that same game, because I was under so much pressure and stress, my hand locked on my stick. And I had to get a heat pad on my forearm during periods from Jim Ramsey. You know Rammer, Kipper. Yep. He's like wrapping my forearm so that I can hold my stick for the next shot. I go out in the third period. I'll never forget it. Doug Waite comes down the – is it Doug Waite? No, might not. Did Wade play for Philadelphia?
No. Not to my recollection.
I'm thinking of somebody else. Might have been Mark Recchi. Mark Recchi. He comes down the wing and he blasts it like five hole, and my stick turns in. It goes through my five hole because I couldn't hold on to my stick. But guess what? It didn't go in. I got lucky. But I wasn't coming out of that game, and I certainly wasn't saying anything about after the game. You know, like, I think that there's a difference there, and I think that guys should just be very happy when you get your starts and keep your mouth shut and keep it moving.
It's funny. There's actually an NFL quarterback that recently came out after the third period. What was his name?
Anthony Richardson.
And he said, not going to lie, I was tired. And it's like, what?
What?
When do you're a pro athlete be like, just need a bit of a break.
You get hit by a bus at this level and you don't cry.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
Yeah. That is bizarre. So, you know, you've been so great at identifying trends and all that for us. Where is it then? So you're getting all these low angle goals. Where do you beat the modern goaltender today with all the ways they're supposed to play? Where's the chinks in the armor these days?
Yeah, this is neat, you guys, because, you know, I first always look at this and I have this list, and it's all the goalies that have retired over the last 7 to 10 years. And you think about how we're talking in the NHL right now, the save percentage in the NHL this morning is 897. Okay. Do you know when it was that low? Once upon a time, Kipper, in 93, 94, it was 895. We haven't seen the NHL goalie save percentage as low as it is today as it has been since 93, 94. All right? There was 8 games last night. 6 teams hit the over. You know, so if you're into the gambling stuff, bet the over. Goalies. Goalies right now in the NHL are only stopping 78% of the shots that are shot high glove. So if you think you're seeing a lot of high glove, you're seeing a lot of high glove. And that's way down from the last 4 years. So I think, you know, I've got a few theories on this. It might be early sports specialization because when we were younger, a lot more kids are playing baseball in the summer. A lot of goalies are playing full-time goalie now. Too many goalies in the league young, as I mentioned. The best glove hand over the last couple of years is actually Logan Thompson, and he catches the other way.
Right. So I thought that was,
And you know what else I thought was interesting? Lefties and righties, they have the same shooting percentage, high glove. I thought maybe there was going to be a difference. I thought more for righties, but it was exactly the same. So it looks to me like, you know, I wonder about the amount of shots goalies are facing each game as well. When you go back to last night's game between Winnipeg and Toronto, And isn't it fascinating that teams are taking fewer bad shots this year? That's the one that really catches me. Teams are really taking fewer bad shots. Last night was a really hard night for Stolarz. He only faced 8 bad shots, like 8 feelers in the game. That's a tough night, fellas. Toronto only had 14 on Hellebuck. The secret sauce to being able to make it hard on a goalie is having 7 or more like grade A's while shooting 12 or fewer bad shots. If you can hit that sweet spot, that's your highest chance to win in winning percentage. And I think this is really fascinating. This is something that we dug up today. So low danger shots are the bad shots, right? And the more bad shots that you take than your opponent, and you're less likely to win the hockey game. So 0 to 9 bad shots in a hockey game, you have a 60% chance to win. So if you take a lot of low danger, it can drop all the way down to, if you shoot 23 to 25 low danger shots, you only win 33% of the time because you're warming up the other guy. You're warming him up so that he's warm when he faces.
Valley, I'd love to see that.
Do you have a ranking of the teams from best to worst?
Yes, I do. But again, that'll be next week's homework.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have more homework.
To hear it.
I have more homework. The right-handed shots having the same shooting percentage, high glove as left-handed shots is shocking for me. Do you know if that checks out historically at all or just a this season thing?
I'll do it again. Once again, I'll look again from last year and the years before. So it's always interesting because I always think of lefties having the option of really being able to tie up a goalie low block or high glove five.
And they got to shoot cross body. You think they just catch more shoulder in there or something.
Right, right.
You know, Valley, last night, speaking of what I would have thought 25 years ago would have been a bad or poor selection shot was Kyle Connor on the power play. He's on his strong side. He takes a pass from Scheifele on his strong side on across the ice, and it's a catch and release that is second to none, and it goes off of Stolarz's head and in the net. Yeah. And I'm telling you, 25 years ago, I'm not sure we had one or two guys that could pull that off, and I'm not sure how many guys this in 2024 can pull it off. But he had an idea of the area that he wanted to put it in, and it included if it hits his net or if it hits his head, I still got a chance to go in. I think that's how good he is. But was that a good selection or a bad selection?
Well, I'll start by saying I was shocked watching that game and seeing Scheifele and Connor look a lot like Kucherov and Stamkos last season, didn't they?
Yes.
I mean, same handednesses, same sides. They're just one-timing pucks back. And Connor gets, okay, that goal, what happened there was Stolarz made a mistake where he went into the reverse of the post where he should have come through a path that would have brought him to the top of the crease.
And on his feet.
On his feet would have been great, but I think he was challenged with a little bit of a screen, so he might have been late on the pass. If you get down on that one, understand it could happen. However, he should have been above his post there, and he would have been at the top of the crease. He should have made a save there on his shoulder. That, for me, wasn't a good one for him. But again, it's overuse of using the reverse again. There's too much reverse in the game right now. It's gotten really bad. It's gotten worse every year.
Last one for me, and I realize it's a complete change of direction here, but tonight Marc-Andre Fleury goes back to Pittsburgh for the last time with the Minnesota Wild. They'll be celebrating his legacy tonight. A curious case throughout history, right? Number one overall pick, wins cups, people love him, but there was a run of years in the playoffs where he gave up the net to Brent Johnson and Matt Murray. And what are your thoughts on the legacy and career of Marc-Andre Fleury?
You know, when you love something enough, you never give up. And that's what he's been like. He has a deep love for the game. He's going to work in the game for sure. He's one of those guys. But I remember when we were in Hartford, and I had mentioned Jason LaBarbera earlier. He was my partner there. And we were going up against the Wilkes-Barre Scranton in the playoffs. And he was a healthy scratch. You know, he came from the NHL the year before, and so he didn't even have it easy in the minors. Like, he never really got on a run until about his third lap through the AHL, and then he came up, and, you know, his first Stanley Cup, you remember he slides across and he makes that save with his shoulder. He didn't have a great playoff that year, but he was the winning goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then it's a number of years where he's out, and then he needs help from Matt Murray to win the next two. And Murray's really the guy. So it's a funny one, right? But he's had some really – he to me always looks like he's just having a lot of fun. He enjoys the game. I don't know Marc-Andre Fleury personally, but I've always appreciated his love for hockey. He just deeply loves the game, and I think that's why he's lasted this long. Is he not the oldest player in the league this year? I think he's 39.
I think he is. If he isn't, he's damn close. I think he is.
Yeah, so it's and earlier I was going to mention that some of these names, the guys that have retired recently, like you think of Ryan Miller and Tuukka Rask and Braden Holtby and Bishop and Price and Lundqvist and Crawford and Luongo, Rene. Like, we've lost a lot of legendary goalies in the last 7 years.
Another emotional night. Stamkos in Tampa and now Marc-Andre Fleury in Pitt. Hey, great job. And like, man, we're working you like a dog.
Boys, I got to tell you, I got something from last week. We wanted to talk about the Panarin-Shesterkin comp.
Oh, right? Yes. That's right. Right.
Who's more valuable? Who's more valuable? Okay. I got this and I got some support on this. So I went to the analytics community on this one. I got some support. Three goals scored or prevented equals 1 point in the standings. Okay? Three goals scored or prevented equals one point in the standings. So Shesterkin's Vezina year, he was a plus 37.43 in goals saved above expected. So imagine that he saved the Rangers almost 38 goals. Last season, Panarin has 120 points. So that was his career year versus Shesterkin's career year. And what it comes out to, guys, is that it looks like we've got an exact tie between Shesterkin and Panarin.
That's amazing. That's how you know you formulated a great question.
I know. So everyone I spoke to said there is a massive argument to support that both players should be paid the same salary.
Oh, if I'm Shesterkin, this is good news. Because Panarin signed that deal how many years ago?
I know, but
I thought this was funny. So you start looking at the 120 points, right, guys? There's only been 39 players in NHL history that have scored 120 points, right? So Gretzky's done it 14 times. Lemieux's done it 8 times. And I kept looking into different things that were interesting, and I wanted to see where Kipper was all time in the OHL.
Well, time's up. We got to go.
62 goals, Kipper. You're tied for 23rd in OHL history for goals scored in a single season.
Big
and
year.
You wouldn't believe the players you're sandwiched between. How's this? Patrick Kane and Andrew Burnett. Yeah, Kipper.
Basically the same careers.
Not bad.
And career earnings.
Andrew Burnett, Own Sound Plater's fame.
They
right there.
Kept stats back then. Yeah. Valley, they actually kept stats.
Oh, hey, Kipper, you can find anything, you know?
I love
it. And you know what? Hey, last thing before I get off, you know what I was laughing about listening to your shows last week, Borny, when you said Dennis Hildeby. Wait, is that his name? Dennis? You know, when you weren't honest.
Kipper once told me that I didn't have to be respectful until they make me earn their name. So I don't feel too bad about that.
So when you said that, I fell off the curb. So I remember this is funny too. So I'm working with Henrik on getting his retirement night. We're doing an interview where I'm doing it professionally for MSG. And as I'm preparing my notes, I didn't realize that there was a goalie that was drafted in Henrik's draft in the fifth round. And Henrik was a seventh round pick. So there was a choice ahead of Henrik before Henrik, right? So this guy's name is Brandon Snee. Okay. I've never heard of him. He played at Union.
Right.
So I asked Henrik in this interview, I was like, Henrik, what does the name Brandon Snee mean to you?
Did
he had no
him?
Idea.
Nothing,
he had no idea. It was his draft.
I remember that name going, I'm better than him.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I was like, Hank, I wrote everybody down in the draft that was selected before me, and all I had to do was play ahead of them, and I was crossing their names off. I took that seriously. He didn't even think twice about it.
You had the Billy Madison lipstick list of people you played ahead of.
That's exactly what I did.
That's
Valley.
These guys are funny.
Great stuff as always, man. Love our Tuesdays with you. Thanks for joining us.
All right, fellas. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks, Steve
Aliquette, CEO of ClearSight Analytics, and of course does a great job on MSG covering the New York Rangers.
Oh my God, that was so good.
That was fun.
Just looking at Fleury's playoff stats, and we got to go here. Just up and down. It's crazy to look at this.
Some great years, some like, terrible years.
When the dust settles, he's got cups. He's got all-time all-time lists.
Yep.
Records.
And first ballot Hall of Famer.
First ballot.
Yep.
And
in 2015, 2016, 875 in six games.
Yeah.
And very good around Halloween. Should you get all-star or Hall of Fame votes because you were really good at dressing up?
Ah, I hate this stuff. You know me. Dressing up and... I'm not even a pranks guy. I always hated the guy on the team that was like, oh, I put but a cup I of water in your never, shin pads.
I didn't want to prank somebody because I didn't want to get in that game.
Yeah. No, not a fun world to live in.
Looking over your shoulder.
Yeah. You got your pant legs sewn together.
Okay.
Poor Robert Schnabel. What was the name of the guy?
Oh, geez. There's a couple guys that caught strays today.
Schnabel.
Knee and Schnabs.
Your homework. We left Valley with homework. Your homework's to find him and get him on the show.
I could do that.
No, you can't. You think you're that good?
Sam, we
could
have him by the end of the show.
I think I could track him down.
All right, homework for you as well. Right. Okay, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into a ton still, including Connor McDavid.
Yeah, and we still have to do game time, right? So we have. We should probably get to Doc and then do that at the back end.
We're out of here. Going to break. Don't go away. Plenty more.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. All right, there's... Oh, and the Sour Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. We can't forget that. I just want to get to... Maybe one of the biggest stories so far this season is there's injuries, and then there's injuries to the greatest players of the game.
I said, you want to talk about this? And you said, it's Connor McDavid, not Connor Brown. Good point.
Yeah, okay.
Rude.
Hey.
Well, I mean, so, Connor Brown would tell you there's a difference.
Yeah. We can sit here and speculate like three stooges.
And we have.
And we have in the past. And then people go, just shut up, you guys. You're not a doctor. And I'm like, okay, then
we'll get you one.
Go get one. So we'll call this a segment, Doctor. Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
And doctor.
And Dr. Jason Smith, orthopedic surgeon, close to 20 years covering NHL, currently the Toronto Blue Jays doctor, and a guy that knows all too well what maybe a guy like Connor McDavid's going through right now. Dr. J, what's up, buddy?
I just want to know on the doctor, am I Chevy Chase? Am I Dan Aykroyd? Who am I on that?
Who's his wife in it?
I don't want to date anyone here, but I don't know what the hell we're talking
Dan
about.
Aykroyd,
I know
Dan
God, Aykroyd, you guys are old.
Dan Aykroyd met his wife on that.
Classic.
Okay, so let's get right to it. You've, like many of us all over the hockey world, saw Connor McDavid go into the boards. There was a little trip involved there. Now, this is a guy with history off of a serious knee injury in the past. If I'm not mistaken, he suffered a PCL tear, which is posterior ligament.
Just let the doctor.
Yeah,
know, right.
Yeah.
So,
his previous injury was a posterior cruciate ligament injury, which is a rare injury for the hockey players. It's where the shin got jammed into the goalpost and tore his PCL. Like you usually see those in car accidents, like dashboard injuries. Or in football, where guys get slammed hard onto the surface. It's pretty rare in hockey. That's what he had. He had a PCL injury. And then back to our discussion about popliteus, he tore his PCL, tore his popliteus, had meniscal tears on the inside and outside, and had a tibial plateau fracture. This is what we learned on that Whatever It Takes documentary that was on.
Okay.
But that was a serious knee injury.
Before we speculate, where would the seriousness be when... you saw him go into the boards. Would that have been the Oilers' first thought is, I hope that part of his knee's okay? Or once it's restructured or rebuilt, or it's as good to go as any knee?
Yeah, so a couple things there. First, when he goes into the boards, the first thing I'm thinking, like, oh my God, did he fracture his tibia? Like, he went in hard and awkward. But when you see him stand up, you're like, okay, it's not a fracture. It's not, he didn't break his tibia, but he's kind of skating around on it. He's testing it out. He's putting a little bit of weight on it. So my first thought, okay, maybe it's not super serious. He didn't break anything, but then he kind of wouldn't push off on it. And then he moves to the bench and he puts it down again. He does that little back leg kind of slide stop on it. So my first thoughts initially were, oh my God, this could be really bad. But then when you see him kind of put weight on it and stop on it, like, okay, this is maybe on the minor side. But the two things I'm thinking when I see that are, one, his old PCL injury, his knee injury, because the knee twisted in that same direction. And then ankle stuff, you know, high ankle sprains in hockey players. They don't get the normal ankle sprains that we get from rolling in your tennis shoes. The boot is so rigid that they get these high ankle sprains. So those were the two things that were in my head when I saw Connor McDavid's injury.
So, you know, those sort of, I feel like when he got up and he put pressure on it and wasn't alarmed by it. It, you know, I guess, what does it call to mind when you see non-contact injuries versus contact injuries? I felt like it wasn't like, sometimes you see a guy hit something they know immediately. It's almost like he had to like go run through his own little bit of testing to figure out what had gone on there.
Yeah, that's a really good sign that it's on the minor side versus like lying on the ground. Now, given how bad his last injury was, like, this guy is tough.
Yeah.
You know, what he went through and how he got back from an injury as serious as it was, like, this guy is tough. So on the bench, you know, he's standing there. Like, he doesn't go straight to the tunnel. He's standing there. He's testing it out. But you see that look on his face during that like, you know, is this my old friend, my knee here? There was something stoic about his look that, like, wasn't something new. It was like he knew what was going on. And that's when I started thinking, man, is this something with his knee again? Is this not his ankle?
So, Doc, when you hear that he's not going to make the trip, the next road trip, and he's going to fly home, is that just being very careful with the best hockey player in the world, or does that automatically say that this is not going to be day-to-day?
Well, early in the season again, right? They're not pushing wins on the road. Like, they're being cautious, and they're going to send him home. They're going to get their MRI. They're going to get their testing. They're going to get their doctors to look at it. So the fact that he went home, it could still be minor, but just with a guy like this, like, you're doing your own MRIs. Like, NHL, the guys are so secretive right now. You know, they don't get it. They don't get MRIs on the road. They all fly home, super secret MRI, super secret doctor meetings. Nobody knows anything. So I think they were just getting him back into the bubble to see what exactly is going on. I don't think it speaks necessarily to the seriousness of it.
Okay, but is there a last one and we'll let you go. Okay, if he tweaked it as a high ankle sprain,
mm-hmm.
it's minimum a month, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, you know, on average 4 to 6 weeks for those. But those can be minor. Those can be little sprains, you know, a week or two. But the thing about high ankle sprains is guys get burned on those. They feel better before they're healed. So guys come back and then they do the exact same thing again. Mm-hmm. So if you hear high ankle sprain, you're going to be on the cautious side. So I'd say minimum a couple weeks, could be 4 to 6.
Hey, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time. And you're out of Scarborough, right? Plug for your...
Scarborough Health Network and OV Surgical downtown Toronto.
All right. Dr. Jason Smith, really appreciate your time, man. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Connor's going to be out a month.
I think so, eh?
Yeah. That's what I got out of that. Like, he's not... And he made an excellent point.
Well, he's a doctor.
You don't... You even if he just tweaked it a little bit enough for him to not play that last night and go home... You're not bringing him back so he can go back on the IR again in a month or two.
Well, it's funny because it does. That's one of the things with a bad start to a season is that you eliminate your margin for error, I should say. You know, where it's like, all right, you got up to a slow start last year with a 2-9-1. Connor and Leon ended up going supernova, and they end up within a point of winning the division and Stanley Cup final. Bad start this year, and all of a sudden it's, you know, they get another bad break on top of it. You know, Evander Kane's not in this year. Zach Hyman's gone cold. And, you know, the D is a little different. And all of a sudden it's like, you know, I still think they're a good team who are going to be okay, but it gets a little harder. You know, your first round matchup starts to get pretty hard if you dig a big enough hole in October, November.
3 or 4 weeks with no Connor McDavid. And listen, we went through it last year, but.
Not without him for 4 weeks.
You want to push your luck on a really, really poor start here. I think there needs to be a little bit of sense of urgency from this hockey club.
Yeah, they're going into Nashville, and Nashville's founded a little bit, into Calgary, and then I believe they have New Jersey and Vegas at home, who are good teams too. So they got a bit of a tough schedule coming up.
Game time?
Game time, baby.
It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. It's 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So last night, my Sharkies found a way to dig. They had to win eventually, boys, and I finally sniffed it out after picking them for 3 straight days. They beat the Utah Hockey Club. Tonight, I am going against the well. I am drying the well. They play on the second half of a back-to-back against the Los Angeles Kings.
They might lose by 11.
And I think the Los Angeles Kings are going to wax them tonight. So give me the LA Kings minus a goal and a half at minus 105. And another one that I love to do, Alex Ovechkin tonight against the Rangers, a team he has historically owned. 42 goals in 73 games against the Rangers. You can picture it all the time. Give me a Alex Ovechkin anytime goal, because if he's going to break the record, he's got to start scoring. He's got to start scoring, so give me an Ovi goal at plus 175.
How was your Aaron Judge home run call last night?
Aaron Judge is the most broken man I've ever seen in a baseball uniform. He is
It's
awful.
Really too bad.
No, yeah. Just those. Yeah. Oh, I'm just,
oh,
you know,
Yankees fans.
Those poor underdog Yankees. They're just having such a good. They only spent $275 million on their roster. They're just having a really tough go. And, you know, they had such a hard road to get to the World Series.
You're just
beating,
so happy. This
beating the Cleveland Guardians and Kansas City Royals, whose combined payroll was $78. They suck. They don't deserve to be there. Their good team's actually winning. They're getting pasted, and they deserve it. There you go.
Do you feel better about the Blue Jays when you trash the Yankees?
Listen, the Blue
is that
Jays.
What this is all about?
I don't even care.
I would love to be the Yankee suck.
I don't even care about the Blue Jays. This is not a Blue Jays conversation. They're not even in the same conversation. But listen, like, the Yankees do kind of suck. They don't have anybody hitting. Their pitching staff is not very good. What, they scored 5 runs or 4 runs?
How about
Freddie
Freeman, our Canadian by proxy sort of.
Five straight homers in five straight World Series games. So, anyways, go Dodgers. I hate to say it. Go Dodgers. Sweep them.
Wouldn't have said that when we were doing our Ohtani show last year.
Yeah,
the one that needs to be stricken from the internet.
Yeah, you know, not the saddest time capsule of all time. Okay, and that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for this odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. It's 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Before we get into the Stamkos visit to Tampa Bay last night to assist, wanted to get your thoughts just on the follow-up of Washington. Like, off to a pretty darn good start, considering this is a team that we thought could slip in last year and this year. But give this team full credit here. And it's not like it's the Ovi show anymore. It's over. The Ovi show's over, and it's
the over show.
Just how many goals can be involved in, how many empty netters he can get towards Wayne Gretzky. But this is so much more right now that we've seen Washington out of the gate.
You know, I give them credit for actively seeking out good hockey players. You know, I really, and I know it's easy to say now in my position, but I don't have a ton of respect for full rebuilds.
Oh.
I really think it's, you don't need to do what San Jose's doing right now.
Yeah.
You can pick up a couple of hockey players to, like, give your fans something, give your young players something. You know, don't let Sheary get waived, trade for Liljegren, get some players. You don't need to be this bad. I give Washington credit for not going quietly, you know. They going the wrong way, but they went out and they got Chychrun, and they went out and they got Jensen, and they
Dubois,
and they got Mangiapane, and they're saying, let's try to be competitive.
I will say,
save for the Flames, good for them.
What I've seen of them this year, that Dubois-Wilson combination.
Large humans.
Big, mean guys, and it seems like Wilson's maybe a little bit of a fire underneath Dubois, playing with him, getting back to being a you-know-what. So,
yeah.
I've liked what I've seen from them to start the year. Yeah. I don't know if it'll last, but and I give them credit for being good.
I like Dylan Strome as well.
You do, eh?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know at the end of the day if they're ready to compete and he's your number one centerman.
Yeah. All jokes aside, I really like Vanilla Ice Cream. I'm not just saying that, but that's kind of him to me. He's,
yeah.
He's fine.
Let's play the Stamkos clip from last night because he goes back. I mean, you see him almost crying, looking up at the Jumbotron. And the clip that I put in there is very telling. So can we play that clip, Derek, Stamkos on his return?
I don't know when that moment comes, if it comes, if it doesn't come. I mean, it's just, like I said, you know, when you're in this place for so long and have the memories, I mean, I don't think you can ever really completely turn the page. That's probably the reality, at least. Some people may be able to do that. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know if that day comes. But I don't think you completely turn the page from it. I think you appreciate it and you love it and you learn from it and then you go and try to bring some of that knowledge to a team to help them achieve some of the things we did here.
See, we spoke earlier about Vladar and just being brutally honest. Like, I don't know if I've ever heard
an athlete
come in and be that honest. And he's so right. I don't know too many athletes that would admit it.
No, you're right.
I'll never get over it.
It reminds me of losing a family member being like, it may get easier, but I'm never going to be over this.
Can I ask you?
That's huge on him. That's a real statement.
Mm-hmm. Part of him just being like, damn, maybe I should have just taken a little less. Stayed.
Let me tell you something.
You never want to take less and you want to be the richest guy
taking
ever.
Taking less.
Okay.
Is not what that guy's all about.
Okay.
Okay. He would never cheapen himself.
I just listened to
himself.
That voice, man. I listened to him talking there.
Never.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay.
Devalue himself. Cheapen yourself.
No,
he'll feel 10 times worse eating a crap sandwich. Crap sandwich contract than getting what his truer value is.
No, this to me, that is a reflection on you.
No, it's not.
Steven Stamkos.
No, it's not. It's a reflection of good business.
For sure it's a big good business, but there's a human side of it where you say, you keep your family in the place where you've been and
Do you know what the money was?
It's not about the family. It's about a team that's making you an offer where they don't want you. Right. Do you understand?
Yeah, and if
they're making you an offer that you can refuse, and they are banking on you not taking it, you take it, and you cheapen yourself, and you cheapen the whole thing.
Well, I don't see it as cheapening yourself. If the team doesn't want you, then you can't stay. That's
all I'm saying here. I watched his whole press conference. That's the clip I pulled from it. That was the most meaningful clip. What I saw is a guy that maybe thinks he would have taken that cheap contract.
Like, snowball's chance.
I'd take
Sammy.
Less money if the team wants you, but not if the team.
He loves those guys. He's talking about how he go for. He's like, oh, we went for dinner and it felt like nothing had changed and blah blah blah.
Yeah, riding jet skis around, winning cups, probably some good memories.
Listen, no way.
Okay,
we do not agree.
Okay,
not the Stamkos I know.
All good.
Yeah, I mean, goes in there last night and had a pretty good night. Couple assists.
Yeah,
came back, took it to OT. Felt like he was shaping up for the fairy tale finish there, but didn't quite happen.
That's just $3 million, still a lot of money.
Yeah.
But not for him.
No, but that's a crap sandwich.
Not for a 40 goal score.
Was it $3
million? I don't know.
I thought it was $5 million. I can't remember anything.
Whatever it was, it stunk. The offer stunk.
Yeah.
To me, if you don't want the guy, don't make an offer. And if I may say this,
but they
out of the Toronto.
But they won't do that because that'll make them look really bad to their fan base.
PR thing. This is like everyone's like, yeah, Tavares may come back on a cheaper deal for the Leafs. You don't want him. There's no dollar amount you want him at. But if you want him, maybe he'll play for less.
Well, he's point of game player. Maybe they should sign him.
9-9, 5 goals.
All right, jam packed show today. Our thanks to Jim Ralph in our Leaf Edition hour of The Real Kipper and Bourne Show, and then Steve Aliquette, Dr. Jason Smith. You working tonight?
No. Carving pumpkins tonight.
Oh, you are.
Nice.
And you got your costume picked out for tomorrow night? Dad.
No. It's not tomorrow. It's Thursday.
Hater.
Oh, Thursday? I don't even know what day it is.
Costume hater.
All right, if you get a chance and you don't catch us live, give us a download on any of the podcast platforms and give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great night, everybody. We're back tomorrow.